We see we have cardiorespiratory fitness, which is the function of our heart and lungs. We have muscular strength, which is the ability to move an object, the maximum force that we can exert in a single muscular effort. Muscular endurance, the ability for our muscles to repeatedly contract. Flexibility, to have good range of motion through our joints. And body composition. In fact, we're going to start with body composition. What is body composition? Well, okay. we've got it sort of working here, so we'll, okay. I guess we'll do this today, and then maybe we can try something for the future.
Luke's our IT coordinator, and so maybe after your session's done, he can...
Yeah, we can figure that out for the future. So, okay, but thank you. Uh-huh. Okay, so body composition, it's what makes up your body. We have fat-free mass, which includes your muscles and your organs and connective tissues and bones. And then we have the adipose tissue or your fat tissue. And yes, we do need a certain amount of fat tissue. Essential fat, we need in males somewhere between 3 to 5% of our total body weight is essential fat. And the 8 to 12%, I think we can make this work. We want to keep that just as a backup here.
Right.
And in females, it's a higher percentage of body fat. A lot of fat around internal organs, around reproductive organs and such. And in fact, that sometimes is always an issue if you were to tell a female you are 22% body fat. That's normal. Okay, that's by a normal range. Where a male in that same ballpark would be around 15%. Okay, typical body composition. You can see that we break this down into bone and muscle and then what are essential fat. And then we're most concerned about this non-essential fat. And I know a lot of people get hung up on their scale weight. And really, probably shouldn't be as hung up on their scale weight as what your body fat percentage is. Because remember, muscle weighs more than fat. And so if you work out and you're more muscular, you'll find that you might actually even gain a little bit of weight. But it's healthy. It's really what you want. Now, body mass index. You hear a lot of people talking about BMI. And in some ways, it's okay. But you get that by calculating or dividing your body weight by your height. And it should come out with some number between 20 and 25. Now, here's the weakness. The people that are rather muscular, I know a gentleman who was a personal trainer, and he was well above this because he was very muscular. He was obviously, so he weighed a lot compared to his height. And when he went to get his life insurance, they looked at his BMI, they said, sorry, you're at a high risk because your BMI is too high. So that's what it says. Not a true measurement of body composition. May be misleading. Okay, what are some of our benefits of regular physical activity? We know it helps our heart and lungs, reduces cancer risk, improves our bone mass, it helps us control our weight, prevents diabetes. You can see there's a long list of things. You've heard of all of these things before. And you can see here is a more extensive list here. We don't have to stand here and talk about, you all know that physical activity is beneficial in so many different ways. Okay, when you're designing your own fitness program, first of all, you want to work all of the major areas that we talked about. Identify what your goals are. Choose things that you like to do. My talk on Wednesday is how to be physically active without even working at it. So we're going to talk about some things that you can do just in your everyday lives and some activities that you may already be doing that help keep you active. Because sometimes the drudgery to come say, I got to go out and exercise. And so we're going to look at some things that are helpful in that respect. Okay, what is cardiorespiratory fitness? How do you measure it? Okay, we measure it with your heart rate. How do you check your heart rate? There's a few different ways that we can do that. First of all, we can take it right here at your radial pulse. We can take it right up here at your carotid pulse. And we have the handy dandy fancy way here, which is a heart rate monitor. We wear the strap around our chest, and through telemetry, it sends the information that it picks up here onto this little wristwatch. They're really handy. In fact, I've used this the last 2 days. Yesterday, I went for a big loop hike around here, and it also tells you how many calories you burn. It turns out in about 2.5 hour hike yesterday, I burned about 1,400 calories. This morning, I took a jog walk up the towards Heart Lake, probably 3.5-4 miles round trip, just a little over an hour, and I burned 700 calories. So it can give you a lot of information, and also it's a lot easier way, you know, when you're trying to be active, taking a heart rate. So we look at the volume of oxygen you can consume as the measure of the kind of fitness you're in. And they call that VO2 max, which stands for the maximum volume of oxygen you can take in. And the higher that number, the better. And so the average person is somewhere around 40-ish, depends on 35 to 45, or someone like a Lance Armstrong that has a real high aerobic capacity, maybe up around 85. Elite Nordic skiers are also up in that very high category.
Is that the thing that you sometimes blow into a...
Yes.
Thing that goes up and down.
You will see people maybe on a treadmill, or they may be on an exercise bike, and then they will be actually, with that, they actually measure the amount of oxygen that you consume. Now, you can also do tests, submaximal tests, where they actually, based on your heart rate, they can estimate your VO2, but that's an actual measurement of the oxygen that you're actually consuming. Good question. And we've already talked about some of these on the other slides, some of the benefits to cardiorespiratory training. You get a decreased resting heart rate. Your heart beats slower. Any idea why your heart beats slower?
More efficient.
It is more efficient. You have a stronger heart. Every time that heart beats, it sends out more blood. It doesn't have to beat as often. You decrease the recovery time. Your body can utilize the oxygen it takes in better. It helps your immune system, can decrease cholesterol level. Remember how we're going to get those cholesterol numbers? The magic number is below 200. Okay, below 200 is for total cholesterol. And HDLs, that's the good cholesterol. We like to see that number above 40. Above 40. And what's the one thing that can increase your HDLs?
Exercise.
That's the one word. You got it. Okay? Exercise.
Yes.
It also decreases your systolic and diastolic blood pressure. Systolic is that top number of your blood pressure. The diastolic is the minimum. So your systolic is like when the heart beats, that's your systolic. And right before it beats again, that's your diastolic. So think of it as kind of like a snapshot in time. It's your maximum and your minimum blood pressure. So when you exercise, does your blood pressure go up?
Yes.
It does. Just the top number, though. Your bottom number, that minimum, should still stay right about where it is. Did you know that 50% of people starting exercise programs drop out in the first 6 months? Yeah, so that's why we try to find ways to make it more of a lifestyle change. It's kind of like diets. You know, whenever I say diets don't work, and they usually don't, it's the same thing here. If you're going to start a exercise plan, it needs to really fit into your everyday activities. Okay, now we take a look at your target heart rate. This is a classic old formula. I'm sure most of you have ever been into any place where you work out. They just have a chart. It's 220 minus your age, and that formula gets you a maximum heart rate, which means your heart rate should not exceed that level. The example I put down here, 220, and let's say you're 50 years old, That would mean your maximum heart rate should not exceed 170 beats per minute. Now, we want to work a percentage of that. And that percentage of a moderate program might be somewhere between 50% of your maximum and 70% of your maximum. So in that case, it would be between 85 and 119 beats per minute. And that's that target training zone. In fact, we'll take a look at that zone. You can see here's one particular chart. They actually gave them various names, such as healthy heart zone, weight management zone, aerobic zone, and so forth. Any idea when you hit up to this level? Now you notice that those percent, most of those percentages weren't working up beyond 90%. Why do your muscles burn so when you go up into that zone?
Lack of oxygen?
It is lack of oxygen, exactly. We go into a different level. It's called anaerobic. The people might say, "Oh, you mean I could do the exercise without breathing?" your muscles don't need oxygen at that moment. Now, your heart, your brain, and everything else still needs the oxygen. But at this level, your muscles could work at that moment to break down the energy systems that you need. They can work without the oxygen. And so, but guess what? They can work really hard. It's kind of like the old tortoise and the hare. Okay? This is the hare. But you know what did the hare have to do after it went down the roadways? Had to stop and rest. Same thing, your muscles make this byproduct called lactic acid. And it just says, I can see the muscles. They have like a little sign, like they go on strike. You know, poor working conditions, too much acid in the muscle. Muscles shut down. They're on strike. Until that acid can get dissipated back in the body. By the way, the more you work out, especially work out like athletes that work at really high levels, they can help to dissipate that quicker. And that's how they can able to continue to work at those high levels and work out hard. But that's just why when you're working at those really high levels, you can't go for real long. So sprinters, they try to work on those systems. But for the rest of us, the other thing down in here, we're burning fat. We're burning sugar and fat at this level. Up here, it's just sugar. So that's our energy system of our body. Now, we have this little saying here, this FIT. And the FIT principle applied to a lot of different things here. And the FIT stands for frequency, intensity, time, and type. Frequency, how often should you do the exercise? And again, they've broken it up here in this chart for cardiorespiratory, strength, and flexibility. Intensity. Now you see they're using between about 55 and 90% in this particular chart. You'll see those numbers. I think I had between 50 to 70 was the moderate, and the 70 to 90 was the higher intensity. The time, you see here, 20 to 60 minutes. Probably the most typical ones are about 30 to 45. I think the Surgeon General came out and said a minimum of 30 minutes most days of the week. Remember I said with water? Okay, most days. So more than, that'd be at least 4 days a week according to that. Now, there's a lot of other things involved. We just looked at some cardio things. Yoga, Tai Chi, Pilates, combination of different things. Obviously, yoga, in addition to the mind-body focus, is very good for flexibility. Tai Chi, increasing range of motion. And Pilates is also combines stretching with some resistance, so it's also very good for improving strengthening as well. Let's take a look at flexibility. Flexibility is an important but often overlooked and neglected part of an exercise program. You can see here, this is the physical pyramid activity. And you can see that all of these things are important here, but exercise for flexibility is so important. We talk about injuries. So many injuries can be prevented through flexibility. The importance of flexibility for well-being becomes more important as we get older. Okay. So it's necessary for optimal posture. It's kind of hard to have good posture when you have poor flexibility. The extremes of inflexibility and hyperflexibility increase the likelihood of injury. I mean, obviously, people that are very flexible can be a problem as well. A lot of that's more congenital. People just can tend to be more flexible. It also helps to prevent muscle strains, back pain. If I had the secret to back pain, wouldn't have to worry about anything from here on out. But you know what? We don't have the secrets to it. But we do know, it's not a secret, that poor flexibility does play a role in back pain. And we'll take a look at that coming up. Stretching can relieve a lot of muscle cramps and stiffness and other pains. Here's a look at flexibility and back pain. Now, we see this as weak hamstrings. This should also say tight hamstrings. Sometimes when we start talking hamstrings with people, they say, well, it's my back that hurts. But you can see how these attach right here to the pelvis and really puts a kind of a tilt on that pelvis that puts a lot of stress on the back. So remember, if we're stretching a muscle, we also need to be strengthening a muscle. I guess we can say the other thing. If we're strengthening it, we need to be stretching it. So here, the muscles in the front, we have hip flexor muscles. Those are the ones that lift your hips up. Those can be too tight. They put the back into a bad position. And also getting back to strengthening, if you have weak abdominal muscles, that also can put stress in that. So all of those kind of things can play a significant role in back pain. And we can see if we have muscles that are what they call long and strong hamstring muscles. So these muscles back here, if they're strong and are properly stretched out, you can see the back stays in pretty good alignment. The long and strong muscles keep the body in good alignment. Let's take a look at some stretching methods. First of all, we're not going to talk too much about PNF. It's a big fancy word. It's usually when someone's doing some stretching with you, they'll stretch and you push. And so that's one that you may have seen people do that. If you want to know what it really means, it stands for proprioceptive neuromuscular facilitation. But we'll just leave it at that. So the other two we're going to look at are static and dynamic. This dynamic has really, in the last few years, has become much more popular. People are realizing that before they started stretching, they would start, okay, we're going to start stretching. Oh, man, that really hurts. And they were doing this static stretch, which is the classic stretch, you know, where you take the stretch and you hold it. Still a very good stretch. But the one that gets you ready for physical activity the best is a dynamic stretch. So if we do a stretch where we just do like a slow lunge kind of thing, that's really good for you. Also, you can do some side lunges as well. Stretches the adductor muscles on the inner part of the thigh, some of the muscles out here, those are very good. As opposed to we just go like so. Static stretch, so really we look at doing this type of a stretch prior to exercise. Sometimes they've used the term ballistic stretching too on that one. And I'll show you why ballistic isn't as good of a stretch, because it's a bouncing, it's a little harsh, a little more... the body has a stretch reflex that will stop that. Static is great to do after a workout. If you've ever been down to the little town of Leavenworth, you know, which is kind of right down the way here, there's a taffy shop there. And they have this big... they have a heating lamp on the taffy, and they have this thing that takes the taffy and kind of stretches it out like this. Of course, it's got the heating lamp on it. And it gets it nice and warm and stretchy and gooey. You can see that taffy is just really... Then you go into the store and you buy the ones out of the bin. And it's like hard and, you know it's hard taffy. And so that's my example. If you take a muscle and warm it up prior to going out, that's why if you do the workout, then you come and do the static stretching. So a muscle already warmed up. So dynamic prior to activity, static after the muscle's already warmed up. Because if you're doing something similar to this, if that muscle's cold, that's not going to work very well. Okay, static. The nice thing about it, safer, less likely to cause injury. We just mentioned, got to warm the muscle up first. Stretch slowly until you feel the tension. Usually hold for 20 to 30 seconds. Relax, get that muscle relaxed, and then you just kind of gradually go a little bit farther. How much is enough? You need to do it regularly. Because if you just do a few stretches before you go out to walk or run or something, that's great to get your muscle ready for activity, but it's not good enough to improve your flexibility. So that's why you need to do that static stretching when you get back after the muscle's already warmed up. So performing warm-up exercises is not the same as doing a stretching workout for flexibility. So that's the dynamic. You need to do some static after you already went out and did that. Now, here's some fancy physiology. Now, you go to the doctor, and they check the reflexes. And they take the reflex hammer, and they hit your patellar tendon here, and you do a little jerk. You know why it does that? Because it's a stretch reflex that's it's protective. Those sensors that are within this tendon, remember the tendon is the part that hooks the muscle down to the bone, and what it does, it says, I'm getting stretched really fast, so we need to contract to protect that thing from getting stretched out. And so I'm going to contract a bit. Now, if we do a stretch like this, a little bouncing, the muscle says, hey, I'm getting stretched really quick. I need to contract to prevent that from getting stretched out too much. So what happens, if you're stretching really fast, you're going one way, the muscle says, hey, you're going too fast. We need to contract. So bad things are going to happen. You want to go one way, the muscle wants to go the other. That's why we talk about going slow and go through the stretch reflex. Stretching aids all sorts of things. You can see they come up with these little handy-dandy things. You can put your hands in here and do all sorts of things. This is a little visual aid that I have coming up for later, but if this were completely round, in fact, I took a hacksaw and cut this off to use for another purpose, my balancing I'm going to show you in a bit. But foam rollers, you can lay on those things, and they are really good for stretching out various parts of the body using a foam roller. It's kind of like the equivalent of doing a deep myofascial stretch that a massage therapist might do. But I guess you get to do it in your own home, where you can just roll on the on a foam roller. Okay, some guidelines for safe and effective stretching exercises. First of all, you don't want to force the stretch to the point of pain. That goes without saying. Okay, you know, the old thing: if it hurts, don't do it. Choose safe exercises. I think we mentioned this before. You need to stretch what you strengthen and strengthen what you stretch. Okay, so if you're going to, like, for example, you've probably seen guys that work out at the gym all the time. You know, they come out like this, right? You know, they can't get their arms down by their side, and their arms are all, and they're pulled forward because their pectoralis major muscles here are so highly developed. You know, they're out to here in their pecs, but their arms are like this, and they got a big muscle that runs under here, so they can't get their arms down by their side. But you know what? They're set up for injuries, especially if they're doing some more bench press. They come back down, they can actually strain that muscle. So that's why it's really important that when you're strengthening those muscles, that you also need to do some stretching. So a lot of times, a simple exercise for that, you can stand in a doorway, just lean forward. Feel a good stretch right there in the pectoral muscles. Some areas needing stretching, the typical ones. Most people have some degree of tight hamstrings unless they've spent a lot of time working on those. Also, the inner thigh, the adductor muscles here. And in fact, I think it was the lady that in the one slide there, kind of a little side stretch like that. Or the other classic stretch is the butterfly stretch. You know, we're coming up like this. Okay. Those are great exercises for the inner part of the thigh. The calf. In fact, you know what? We've been sitting here for about a half hour now. Why don't we try a calf stretch? This is a simple, easy one. I'll just have you guys kind of, you can stand up and face your chair. Yeah, We have two main muscles in our in the calf, and it's important to stretch both of those. So the one, we're going to put the heel back and keep the heel flat on the floor, and we're going to lean forward, keep that heel down, and we're going to hold that for about 20 seconds.
Your knee is straight.
The knee is straight on that one. Now, there's a the muscle we're stretching right now is called the gastrocnemius. It has a little friend right underneath of it that we can stretch. Let's do that same stretch. Let's bend the knee. Keep the heel flat on the floor. And lean forward. It feels a little bit different because we are actually slacking that muscle that's on the top and allowing that muscle underneath to stretch. And that one's called the soleus muscle underneath. Okay, good job. We want to be unbalanced, exactly. Let's do that. Other side, straight knee first. Good point. We always want to make sure we balance each side out. Okay, and then we can go ahead and try the bent knee stretch there on the other leg. Okay, good job. Now, one little piece of trivia, the attachment of that, the soleus, the one you did with the bent knee, that is oftentimes the muscle that is in, that is irritated or actually is pulling on the bone in shin splints. So that's probably the key one to stretch there if you're feeling that aching pain on the inner part of your shin. Hip flexors, the classic hip flexor stretch is just pushing your hips forward, and you should feel it right here in the front part of your hips. Okay. The lower back, and the classic one is where you're just laying down, bringing both knees up to your chest on your back. That's a good one. There's a lot of others. In fact, let's see here. Okay, we can do this with both knees coming up. Another one, there's usually some deep rotators in your hip that can also get kind of tight. So you can cross your leg over like this, and mine are pretty tight. and you're bringing this knee up to your chest, like that, and you feel that out here and outside here. You know what? Sometimes you may just sit there like that, without having to bring that up if it's kind of tight. Then you do the same thing, other side, and of course that's stretching this side.
Well, now these are static stretches, right?
These are static stretches.
These should be done after you get your muscles warmed up.
Right. Yes. Yes.
So a quick question about static stretches. What kind of time period after muscle warm-up do you have to really maximize the benefit?
Well, probably the best is after you've done something, probably pretty much just directly transition into that. Now, you can do a little bit of... Like, let's say you're doing something a little bit more intensive level, cool your body down a little bit because a lot of times if you lay down, you get that pooling of blood and you get that kind of lightheaded feel if you try doing some things too quickly right after exercise. So you're always better to gradually taper down your whatever you're doing. If you've gone for a run, you can jog and then kind of do some walking till your heart rate drops a bit. But as long as your muscle's still warm, just within a few minutes.
Okay, so you don't have like an hour.
No, because you're probably going to cool down pretty well in that period of time of an hour. I would just say within a few minutes. You probably don't have to do it immediately, but yeah. Within a few minutes.
Okay.
Good question. Okay, and you can just see some. I just put some examples of things up. A few things for stretching the tricep muscles here. Some rotation stretches. This is another version of that. Hip flexor stretch. Just keep having the knee down there on the ground. There's the adductor stretch. Now, I was even showing you this one. The only thing with this one, why we got the bad symbol here, is that you're leaning forward. So a lot of people, it's a hamstring stretch, but they do this. And that puts a lot of added stress on your back. If you're going to do this one, keep your back straight. And probably the better thing is to actually bend this knee down. And so we're actually stretching. I'm feeling a really good stretch as I go down, but I'm keeping the back straight. And that keeps the stress off the back. And this is probably easier than doing that, where we just kind of, you're leaning the body forward on this stretch, but you're keeping the back straight. So think of bending from the hips, not bending in the back with that stretch. Okay, now let's take a look, shifting gears a bit, looking at muscular strength and endurance. We already talked about, we know that the strength is what we can do one time. That's why it says one RM, it's one repetition maximum, one rep. Muscle endurance, ability to do things over and over. Now, I think for most of us, if we're starting a program, we want to start with some muscle endurance. We're not going to be trying to go out and lift heavy weights with our program. Now, there's a lot of different ways we can generate resistance. Okay, weights. You know, you can get dumbbell weights, barbell weights, whatever. One thing I love are elastic bands. Okay, this is like a big wide piece of tubing, or this is actually just a band. Here, this is my tubing here. And this stuff is really cheap. You can find it in a lot of different places. Really light to travel with. You know, and you can do all sorts of different exercises. I know one of my favorites. I just pull this up like this. I can, of course, I can also double it up as well. And I can do, also, where it says number 5 body weight, I can do what I call the mini squat. This is probably the one exercise that I give to more people. Since I am a certified athletic trainer, my job is sports medicine. So Wenatchee High School, my job is for the athletes. I take care of their injuries. And when they come in for a variety of things, with this one, if they have a variety of knee pain, this really helps. It helps to strengthen the muscles that stabilize your kneecap. It helps to stabilize the knee. We can also do things for strengthening the quadriceps in the front, the hamstrings in the back. It's a real simple exercise. In fact, we can get rid of that band and just simply do a little mini squat. The one key when you do it, you got to make sure that your kneecap is lined up over your toes. In fact, we usually like to say you want the kneecap right over your second and third toes. Because if you're going like in like that, going out like that, that puts a lot of stress on the kneecap. And that's a real, I'm sure a lot of people at one time or another have had aching underneath their kneecap. In fact, sometimes that's called runner's knee. And the biggest thing there's a lot of different things we look at, but sometimes it can be strengthening of the muscles here in the quadriceps. Now, one other issue there, they call it the kinetic chain. And that includes coming from the foot to the knee to the hip and even into the back. And so a lot of times people, even with back pain and back problems, it's because what's going on down here or here that can be causing pain elsewhere. So we always want to look at the whole body and things. So you can see here we use manual resistance, water, so just a variety of things to provide some resistance. And of course we call isotonic. Isotonic is referring to same tone or same weight. So whenever we put, say, 10 pounds of dumbbells in our hands, if we're doing a curl, it's 10 pounds through the whole range of motion. I mean, we have some other types of exercise that where we push against an immovable object and things that it's not as effective. So most of the things that we do are isotonic. You can see here we're doing various weight work, and this is body weight, and we got the rubber bands. Okay, there's a look at the elastic tubing. We can work on strengthening, in this case we're doing strengthening the flexors of the wrist. We're talking about various types of exercise equipment. We already talked about the heart rate monitors. A pedometer, okay, counts the number of steps you take. Whatever helps you be motivated to do the exercise, if a pedometer is like, I'm taking so many steps today, that's what we need to do. Now, I was trying to bring one. I didn't want to try to carry it up here, but the stability ball. You know, stability ball is also known as a physio ball, a Swiss ball, exercise ball. Those are the big balls that people use. They are so good because they can bring in so many different muscle groups. Balance boards. Now, this is one that I made. You know, you can buy commercial balance boards. In fact, tomorrow morning at 7:15, well, we're not using this stuff, but we're actually, it says add balance to your life. I'm not sure if you saw that. That's on the eye opener for tomorrow morning. We're going to do some balance things, so, but without balance boards. In fact, let me just stand on this right here. So we can stand here and just try. No, this is fine. Okay. So you can make something. It's a piece of wood. This is a... Actually, a pitching machine baseball that I just cut in half, and I glued it and screwed it onto this board. In a moment, you're going to get the rest of the story on the balance. We talked about resistance bands, medicine balls. Now, I hate to say this is not really a medicine ball, but I was going to bring an 8-pound medicine ball in my suitcase. But this is my prop. Assume this is 6 to 8 pounds, or it could even be 4 pounds. We're really finding that we can do so many things with a medicine ball. In fact, we're going to talk about that here in just a moment. In fact, here we go. One plane exercise. Think about what we do. Okay, here we go. One plane of motion. Okay. Let's see. Let's try doing, you know, bench press. One plane of motion. Squats. One plane. Everything's one plane of motion, right? What do we do in life? Okay, we walk around like this in one plane, right? Okay, we're moving. How do people hurt their backs? They reach out, they come up, and they rotate. Okay, so we want to strengthen those muscles, and same thing we're working with athletes. You think about an athletic sport, there's very few, maybe except a track runner who's running the 100 meters straight down the track. Everyone else, you know, if you're swinging a bat, you're swinging a tennis racket, a golf club, everything is a rotation. So they are not one plane of motion. You can see this is just an example of an exercise where we're taking a medicine ball and we are tossing it. Or we're doing things where we're, you know, moving like this. We're moving in various planes of motion. So there's actually three what we call cardinal planes of motion. We got this ones where we move forward and back. That's called the sagittal plane. We got the ones where we move side to side. That's called the frontal plane. And then we have this one, which is the transverse plane. And we think that most everything we normally do is in the sagittal plane, exercise-wise. Now, you probably, if you've seen exercise trends in the last 5 years, they are moving this direction. And I was real fortunate to be working with some very forward-thinking people in Wenatchee that had worked with some people that kind of came up with these major concepts several years ago. And so we have a morning workout at Wenatchee High School 2 days a week where we come in, and one of the days is just using medicine balls. And we're just doing, you know, we have people from the community come in, and we do the multiple planes of motion. Because if you strengthen those other planes of motion, then you'll be less likely to be injured because those muscles will be stronger and used to doing those kind of things. Oh, here's my question. Does spot reducing work? No. Now, here's my question. So if spot reducing works, it means that people that chew gum are going to all have skinny cheeks. Right? Okay. So often you see people say, oh, I've got to do something with these hips. So I'm going to do about 1,000 laying on my side leg lifts. See, I picked a guy here, though, for this one. But still, okay. Spot reducing does work. Now, is it bad? No, because you're going to strengthen some important muscles. These muscles right here, it's important to strengthen those. But to think that you're just going to be able to just keep doing these, okay, it's a twofold process. You need to, same thing here. It's kind of like, you know, I've got this big belly, and I've got to do some sit-ups. I'll go do sit-ups all day. until I take this belly off. Okay? Spot reducing, well, okay, it's two phase. You need to tone those muscles up, so you do need to use some kind of abdominal strengthening. It may not necessarily be sit-ups. By the way, sit-ups, you only use your abdominal muscles for the first little bit of the sit-up. After that, the hip flexors here kick in and pull you up the rest of the way. So probably, like the crunches where you just come up a little bit, those are much better. There's a whole lot of other exercises too. And then, of course, so what's the rest of the secret then? For if you want to reduce
calories.
You do, so basically, it's a combination of, yeah, so it's reducing calories and also cardiorespiratory exercise. So we're burning off the fat. Okay, let's finish up here. We'll talk about balance. Balance is the key to life. Now, you've all heard of cardio and strength and flexibility. I threw that word on there. Did you see the word proprioception?
Yeah, we don't know what it is.
Okay, that's why I threw it on there. Okay, proprioception. Well, in fact, let's talk about it here. Balance and proprioception. It's a little like balance. Now, we're saying balance is whole body stability as regulated by inner ear and visual cues. Okay. However, proprioception plays a role in your sense of balance. Here we go. Now, within ligaments, tendons, muscles, there are sensors. Kind of like that sensor we were looking at when we were talking about that knee jerk. These sensors go up to your brain and they tell you whether, so I'm standing here balancing. And so if I start going one way, they say there's a lot of tension on certain structures. So my muscles it'll send information down to the muscles and correct that. Now, if you don't have, like, let's say after you have an injury, you probably notice when you're walking, you don't feel as sure of yourself. And even if you haven't had an injury, you may just not have very good balance. In fact, a lot of hospitals and clinics have started programs with elderly people, and a lot of times they're called the fear of falling class or something similar, and it's to work to all the fractures of hips and things to improve their proprioception and balance. Okay, so we're already talking a little bit about balance. Obviously, we're not going to be standing, but this has to do with body proprioception. So when you're laying on the ball and it's a little bit unstable, it's the same thing. Your muscles, they're stretching, you're going one way. And so right the body, get the body in the right direction. Because this is the way life is. Life is unpredictable on this ball. You know, as opposed to, okay, I'm going to stand here like this. You know, that's not a very predictable exercise. If you're on the ball, in fact, a lot of times you may see that people are actually doing exercises on the ball because not only are you strengthening the muscles you would otherwise, but you're also adding proprioception to the body or making those. So it's really what proprioception is, a sensory awareness of what the body is doing. Okay, here we're talking about proprioception and balance. You can see you're on the balance board like I was on this balance board here, and you can see we have these muscles here on the outside. We've got the muscles around the kneecap joint. We've got the calf muscles. They are all firing. Same thing too here. We've got the person using the medicine ball here, and they're making sure everything's lined up properly, making sure their body is in proper alignment and proper balance. Here we go. You could do a push-up, right? But how about do a push-up on the physio ball? And you can see how much more that the body has to stabilize to keep you in proper alignment. And you can see the other shot there. The person's on some type of a balance apparatus. And that's why when we have people that injure their ankles, say if you ever get an ankle sprain, I mean, even if you're just doing this, you're standing here and balancing. Now, what's one more thing that'll make right now that can make this more challenging? Close the eyes. Because it mentioned that both the inner ear and the eyes help you balance, If you take the visual part out, it changes everything a lot. Okay? So then we have to rely more upon the sensors within the soft tissues of the joint to make it work. Now, exergaming. Okay, I know my main topic is outdoor movement here. However, I have to throw this in because we've done some work in our treatment center at Wenatchee High School with exergaming. Yes, and I think I got the British version of this slide here. You see the center of, my center of gravity. But has anyone ever used the Wii system?
Yeah.
Okay. It's pretty amazing that you can, yeah, put someone stand there and it tells you what your center of gravity is. And it says that in this case, the person was putting more weight on their right side. And there's a whole gamut of games. And the key with this, it gives you a lot of feedback. So you're able to, you see this, you can see exactly what the feedback is. And a lot of times, if we're standing there balancing, or we have to move the ball through a maze, or we have to, you know, we're on this little board and we have to dump the balls through these holes in the board and we have to move the balls through. So it's very good. And I know a lot of groups are doing a lot of senior groups are out doing these bowling leagues, Wii bowling leagues and things. And it's really quite interesting. Okay, so we want to get moving so we can experience the many-colored grace of God. God gives us some places to get to. You ever know where that is? It's not this year, I promise you. That is the Lyman Basin. That is the Lyman Basin. So this is actually from Spider Gap. By the way, I love backpacking and photography. So if you come to some of my other ones, or you'll see some of my other photos here. But Lyman Glacier comes right off into here. These are the series of lakes here. This is Lyman Lake proper right there. Of course, right down the River Creek Valley right there. So
where's Cloudy Pass?
Oh, Cloudy Pass is... Cloudy Pass is right here. Yeah. Just work your way up the hill and come right over there and drop right down in there. So... Okay. Does anyone have any questions?
What about the neck? Sometimes your neck muscles up.
Yeah, and sometimes you can just kind of like wake up with a stiff neck or a wry neck. That's kind of one of those mysteries because sometimes you sleep on it wrong.
Yeah.
And things. Yeah. A lot of times, if you can, you know, like a warm shower or something, you know, will kind of warm that muscle up. Kind of what we were talking about before. It's not like a muscle we can. Or put something warm, and then try some easy stretching.
But sometimes the pillow, they have this foam in it that sometimes it's too high or it doesn't fit your neck right.
Right, right. And that's the one thing, especially, of course, when you're traveling, too, can always be an issue, you know, making sure you have a pillow that's the proper height. I know some people are way more comfortable with pillows with varying heights and things, so that's the key. I mean, there's other pillows that have little, you know, waves in them and things. And some people like those. Some people like one pillow. Some people like two, a thick or thin.
Sometimes they do with no pillow and feel better.
Sure. I think so. That really kind of just depends on it depends on what your preference is and what works best for you.
Do you have any thoughts on both of us sitting here with our legs crossed? I've heard two points of view on whether we should do that or not.
You know, I think mine's just a common sense approach. I think, you know, your body's pretty good at letting you know when you know it doesn't like it. And if you're sitting there, or after you've done it, it's like, oh, that just doesn't feel so good, you know. And so listen, you know, listen to your body.
Depends on how good a shape it's in, or what kind of shape it's in when you do that. Yeah.
Sometimes, right.
Okay, thank you.
Sometimes I've walked in back of a Chinese person, and they had this slow moving exercises they do every morning. They're stretching and they're walking and they'll do something, you know, they keep moving.
Right.
I don't know what it's all about, but
there's a lot of different things. There's Tai Chi, and I'm not familiar with a lot of those, but I know there's There's a lot of effective things out there, and I guess whatever works best for you. I mean, I gave you some ideas here and things, yeah. But you know, what works best for you is what you really need to do.
So I'm curious. The thing I have trouble fitting into my kind of daily routine is definitely the stretching and flexibility building.
Right.
So what have your clients or other people found successful? Because, you know, realistically what happens is most of my exercise is transportation related, so I come back after, you know, going to a meeting on my bike or whatever, and it's time for me to immediately get off the bike and put away the groceries and start cooking dinner. There's
right.
no way I have time to stretch out or, you know,
right.
or I come back from hiking and I'm rushing up to lunch instead of taking...
Right. I mean, it doesn't have to be a lengthy session either. I mean, you think maybe if I can just get 5 minutes here, and then I guess if you ever have time, you maybe you could throw a little dynamic stretching in the times after you have cooled down. Because you probably don't want to go right back. Let's say you sit down for an hour, and all the time I want to try to stretch, static, you know, like... This one's kind of tight now, you know. But, you know, maybe you could just try to do some dynamic things.
As you're moving.
Right, as you're moving around, too. Kind of incorporate that into your motion.
And then what about, you know, like I used to do pretty regular yoga, and because of various other constraints, including financial, actually, I don't do a regular yoga program anymore. How effective are those kind of dedicated... They have spiritual benefits for you. You know,
oh, definitely.
But,
yes.
but how effective are they from a body perspective?
I think a lot depends. I mean, because there's a lot of different types of yoga programs. I mean, there's the new hot yoga has become. I know my mother, my 75-year-old mother-in-law is a yoga instructor. You want to ask you? Yes, and she doesn't do that this part of the program. But I know they have the room. They crank the heat up, and so you can do the yoga in that.
Using your diaphragm for breathing, that helps a lot too.
Good deep breathing is always helpful. Again, a lot probably would depend upon the individual yoga instructor too.
Yeah.
Now, but I think anytime you mention a dedicated program, I think you can't go wrong with dedicated program because it just means you're doing something regularly. However, sometimes dedicated programs don't fit into our schedules.
Right.
Or whatever reason, financially or time-wise. So I guess a lot of times it's more of lifestyle. We have to do things that kind of fit into our lifestyle, too, so that we can continue to do them, as opposed to, okay, it's January 1st, you know, it's... You know, all the health clubs, it's a bonanza for health clubs. You ever watch right after the first of the year that every health club is offering and every diet plan is on TV trying to cash in on these people who are with their New Year's resolutions? Okay? And, you know, you can lose weight fast! Right there is the mistake. We'll talk, in fact, tomorrow's talk is body by God, maintenance by you. Which... It's a revelation that I got maintenance by you, and so we'll talk a little bit about that, because obviously diets don't work, and most people can't stay. I mean, it's more of a lifestyle kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Kind of same thing with exercise. So, yes.
If you have shin splints, like, is it okay to run when you have them if you like stretch and ice?
That is a great question. You know, and I get that question from athletes just like yourself almost on a daily basis, especially in the spring in our treatment center. The answer is always, it depends on how painful they are. If they get to be too bad, sometimes... I just went to my national conference last week and looked at there was a research article, and a lot of it said it really didn't depend on what you did treatment-wise. The rest was the biggest healer on those things. Here's my one tip on shin splints. If you ever get to a time where you're getting like, I got one spot right there that's really hurting me, that's a big red flag, because sometimes that can be a stress fracture. Now, if it hurts like, oh, it hurts all the way up and down my shins, like it hurts from like there to there, this is very general, but typically if it's a bigger area, that's more the inflammatory thing of shin splints. So there's kind of like with any, it's like any injury. It's like, this is really bugging me, you know? What do I do with it? So there's a time where sometimes you have to do some cross training where you might end up bicycle riding, swimming, doing something else, and this is for any injury that would be helpful to get off of it. So those are some of my kind of general thoughts and ideas on shin splints or anything else. Yes?
Is there any kind of a book you can recommend that would give you just give you the broad variety of what you should be doing? And you talk about a bunch of topics here.
Right. I mean, really, this is kind of the whole gamut of fitness, because we talk about cardio and things. There's a lot of sources of information out there.
Elsewhere. Do you have any recommendations or any suggestions?
I keep thinking, I mean, for me, there's a lot of it's like textbook kinds of things. I know that there's a lot of, I'm not familiar with specific books, but I know there's tons of things.
Or would you recommend getting a personal trainer for a while to get something set up? And then,
you know what? A personal trainer, probably, if you really haven't worked out a lot, probably it's a good place to start. Just to kind of learn how to do the exercise, and then if you feel, a lot of times, you got to figure out the reason why you want a personal trainer. Is it because you need the instruction, and that might be at the beginning, but down the road, is it that you need continued instruction, or you need a cheerleader? I mean, and you know what? A lot of people need that and want that. And so, and that's a good reason. It's a good reason. I mean, it's a costly reason, but it's also a reason to have a personal trainer. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, one of my certificates, I mean, I don't practice as a, I teach a class for my high school students to become personal trainers, but you know, in my position, I deal more with the sports injuries than do the training. But a lot of that is the balance between being a cheerleader and then also providing the instruction.
Well, we kind of, you know, this sort of haphazardly do some free weights, you know, where we like so and like this. Step up a step and down, you know. But I just don't know whether that's enough or not, or whether it's the right one to do. And let me ask this question, too, for no geezer. Is there any other senior sports trainers?
Oh, yeah.
How do you find one?
I don't know. You know, that's always something I figure, if I ever stop being a high school teacher, that I would like to do that.
Yeah, so
now, I'm not quite to that point yet, but... there are people out there. You know what? I have told my high school students, I'll tell you what I tell them. They're in a class called fitness specialist where they learn to be personal fitness trainers. And I'll say, I always ask them, so what are your career plans? Like, oh, yeah, I want to work with athletes. I want to make them bigger and faster and stronger and things like that. Well, you know what? If you really want to get, you know, jobs, you're going to work with, you know, middle-aged to older people, the baby boomers and beyond, that, you know, because they are the people that want to stay healthy and stay fit and need to. I mean, I think a lot of people are realizing it's in our healthcare system, it's way cheaper to prevent some of these problems, you know, and with exercise programs. Like, insurance companies are going to figure it out. It's like, wait, if we're paying all this money on the back end here, maybe we could save a lot more money if we paid a little bit of money on the front end too. So, but getting back to your question, there are some out there. Because
in my town, I would start with the YMCA.
YMCA would be a great place to start.
Yeah. We had a class in Portland that was specifically designed for older adults that was at some of the community centers.
Yes.
There was, in Portland, there was a class that was specifically for older adults at the community center, and it was adaptable. I could sit in a chair and do certain exercises, or you could do them standing up if you were able to. But it was all designed around specifically the kinds of concerns. So maybe class.
Right. There's some hands over here. A couple of them, we got to get out of here for
this
the next
question
one.
That you're asking.
You made the distinction between a personal trainer that you would go to for a cheerleading type thing. Can you get a consultant with personal trainers? Do personal trainers act as consultants, and you go to them and they look at you and they work with you for a limited time to get you an orientation? Is that a possibility?
Well, it depends. I mean, they can do it a lot of different ways. Some personal trainers may just get you started, like what you're referring to. Some personal trainers may work with you as long as you want to continue to pay them.
I wondered if there was a word for, do they call them consultations or not?
They're all personal. Now remember, there's a whole variety of personal trainer certifications. So there's from the lower level to the higher level too, and everything in between. So in most reputable gyms and things, we'll have people who, have the more reputable certifications. Thank you very much. You've been a great audience.